So what does it require to heal? Like this. Number one, it's important to identify your injuries, your wounds, the places of your pain. That's very necessary. Two, it's important to have a witness. You need someone to say, that was difficult. That hurt. That would be very hard to go through. You need someone to say that. But if you really wanted to heal, what you would say to the someones that you really love and honor is, I want you to listen to me cry three times over this, and the fourth time, love me enough to walk away. To say that's enough. To not give my wounds that type of power. Then you need to study, to observe. Study is a very mental word, so you can use study, you can use observe. You need to become very attentive to how much of you is using your wounds and how much of your wounds have slipped into this subcutaneous world of power that says, I have now created 17 excuses from this wound. I have converted it into currency. And the currency is excuses. I give myself permission not to do what? Not to do the following things. Exercise, take care of myself, lose weight, monitor my diet, create what I want, try as hard as I should, do whatever it is you want to do. Any excuse you have, I promise you, comes from a wound. Study your excuses, because that's where you're going to say, this is really going to be tough to give up this wound because I've converted it into currency. And you're getting a lot of mileage out of your currency. Let me put it this way. If you finally say, that's it, I have to give up my victim dialogue, my victim consciousness. So what helps me is that I don't hang out with victims. They're going to say, my, haven't you changed? Well, that's the good news and the not so good news, because yes, you have changed. But if you think other victims are going to be happy that you've suddenly are de-victimizing, think again. They're not going to be. They'll see it as what? Betrayal. They'll see it as betrayal. You have to be strong enough to let yourself be seen as having changed, because you cannot take all your worlds with you. And this is where you'll face the biggest fear of all, which is, what will my world look like if I'm healthy? How will I interact? How will I intimately relate with people as a strong, healthy person? How do I bond with someone if I haven't a wound to share with them? What's it look like to bond out of strength? What's it look like just to bond out of love? I love you. I don't need a wound to bond with you. I just really love you. I don't need a wound to lock you into my network or into my phone book. One thing I tell everyone, if you really want to heal, watch your wound language. Watch when you're speaking woundology. And I assure you, every single time you start sharing wounds with someone, you've got a private agenda. One, you want power with them. Two, you've got an intention to control them in some way, shape, or form. And three, you're planning for a rainy day when you're going to need their support or an excuse. You're laying the groundwork so you can say to them 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years from now, remember I told you I had this bad experience? Well, I'm remembering it now. I can't come over. You're doing it. I'm telling you, we do long-range manipulation planning. Really, I'm telling you, it makes long-range financial planning look like a day at the beach. Those are your ways out. And if you are strong enough to be in present time, something else I want to add as a final note, which is the presence of grace and what prayer is. It is irrelevant to me to whom you pray, so long as the prayers go up and not down. The seventh database, or your seventh chakra, is like your grace bank account. Isn't that a delicious way of thinking? Now, how it works kind of looks like this. Let's say you have a negativity attack, or you're suddenly in some place with a lot of negativity. And what if you needed 60 chips of grace to get you out of here, to keep the experience, quote, non-physical, so that it can't touch you? That's where grace comes in. I remember in 1975 in Chicago, I got caught in a riot. I was working at a hospital. I was the public relations director. I was called in on my little beeper because there was a riot in Humboldt Park in Chicago, and the hospital had 17 cops who were wounded and injured, and all of the media was at the hospital, and I had to go and maneuver this. So in my naivete, I talked my cousin into driving me to the hospital because my car wasn't working. We drove right into the heart of the riot, right into it. Now, this is where grace paid off. Because in my naivete, the perception was given to me that this was a parade. Right. Now, why is that important? Because none of my circuits got up and did anything or created the magnetic field of attraction for the victim, because parades don't scare me. Do you see this, huh? So there I am in the middle of this with my cousin, and four men come up to the car carrying crowbars and things like this, and they intend to turn the car over, bash us in, and burn us alive. I'm still in the perception that this is a parade. That is the grace, because so long as I'm in that perception, there is no law of magnetic attraction, and their aggression cannot get me. I understand this now. I didn't then. Now I do, because this experience was like something I have never had before. Then I remember grabbing my cousin Judy, and I said to her, "Whatever you do, don't think fear. Don't be frightened." Now, I don't know how come I knew that. I was only 22 at the time. And then I remember screaming at the top of my lungs to heaven, "You've got to be kidding. I am not dying here. You understand that? Now get me out of here." Now, the point is, it never occurred to me that I wouldn't be protected. And I think I used all the years of having prayed with the nuns. All my units came out. Because, so help me God, they left our car alone. They bashed the taxi cab in back of us, and they destroyed the face of the taxi cab driver. And the crowd parted like the Red Sea. And we drove right through it and to St. Mary's Hospital on Division Street in Chicago. And then it hit me what we'd been through. But until that time, and now I understand it, was I was being held in perceptions that were not part of this experience, and therefore I could not participate in the experience. Now, in that same way, I offer you the perception that prayer without attachment, just imagine that you're storing chips as a way of protecting your biology, as a way of literally storing units of light. It is crucial. And I also think I need to say that in the world of the mystic, creating your own reality and creating your health are perceptions that need the strength of the mystical discipline, the discipline of the mystic, in order to have physiological response. Otherwise, they'll create mental ecstasy for you, but you'll never see the consequence physiologically. Because you must be willing to discipline your spirit and get your spirit in present time in order for those perceptions to have physiological impact. And spiritual discipline is an essential ingredient for the responsibility of creating your own reality and creating your health. I thank you.
This concludes part one of Why People Don't Heal with Carolyn Mace. Our program continues with part two.